It's the TED Radio Hour from NPR. I'm Manoush Zomorodi.
So Lily telling me that you three want to go out, huh?
Yes, sir.
Who's going?
On the show today, yes, loudmouths.
Write their name and number on this paper. And what time you are coming home, huh?
9?
Make it 7. Okay, 7's fine.
Lily Singh was in her early 20s, still living with her parents in Toronto, when she hit it big on YouTube.
Aunties have no filter.
Oh, okay. You want everything to be sugar-coated, huh? Maybe that's why you gain weight. Okay.
With videos that poked fun at her culture.
No one on YouTube really looked like me. There, to my knowledge, was not another South Asian woman talking about relationships or issues they were having with their family or, like, their period or, like, all these things that were considered taboo.
Girls get a period because when they're talking to someone and that person finished their sentence, they say, period, here you go. Thank you.
To some, this might not sound taboo. But to her Indian community, Lily's videos were shocking.
I'm an adult, full-fledged adult, and I have a hard time being intimate with people.
Intimate with the people.
It was clear she'd struck a nerve, especially for young people with immigrant parents. Millions of people from all over the world began following her online, and she started making a good living, a really good living. In 2017, Lily was listed in the top 10 of YouTube's highest paid stars.
A lot of my following was because people were like, oh my God, she is speaking about my experience in a way no one else has ever spoken about my experience on screen. And that's how I built a community.
All these accolades were great. But for Lily, success was also about proving herself to her family, especially her grandfather.
My first impression of him was, oh, this person really was not overjoyed at my birth.
So when I was born on September 26, 1988, my grandparents and great-grandparents back in India didn't find out for 2 weeks.
Here's Lily Singh on the TED stage.
And it's not because the phone lines were down or because they weren't available. It's because there was a complication with my birth. And that complication was being assigned female at birth. You see, because my mom had been told that if she gave birth to a daughter, it wasn't worth phoning home about. And so there were no congratulations or Indian sweets sent our way. Just the reality that from the moment I came into this world, I was already a disappointment to so many people.
So when Lily went on a world comedy tour, she made sure to visit the grandfather she had never met in India.
So I went into that meeting as an adult, feeling really emotional and feeling really bitter. And then when I arrived at his house, he put a flower garland over me and was celebrating me. And he even went on to show me, like, all these news clippings he had saved of me. And he said the words, a son could have never done what you did for us. That was a monumental day in my life.
Did it not annoy you in some ways that your grandfather sort of accepted you precisely because you were in the newspaper, because you were famous, because you got what could be considered, you know, superficial accolades?
Totally. You're absolutely right. And I will admit, it's not perfect. It's not the perfect scenario. It's super late and it's super superficial, but I still need it to count for something. I, in my ideal world, would have my grandfather be like, oh my God, the patriarchy's garbage. I get how it's affecting you and me both. I understand how it's held me back. But I know that's not happening.
No.
Like, it's not going to happen.
In so many different cultures, women have been told to stay quiet, do as they're told. And so they find that the only way to make waves is by being loud. So today on the show, loudmouths, reaping the rewards and consequences of speaking out and making people uncomfortable. Stories from three female performers. Pussy Riot founder Nadia Tolokonikva.
We don't hear about heroes who fight against Putin and Russia, but they exist.
Playwright Sarah Jones.
It does force you to speak up and be squeaky and be loud.
And of course, comedian Lily Singh.
You know, I grew up feeling the disappointment from a lot of people in my culture, from a lot of men in my family, of what it means to be a girl. Simple, simple things. Girls shouldn't dress like that. Girls shouldn't whistle. Girls are not supposed to do these careers. And, you know, every step of the way, there was always this limitation because you were a girl.
I'm telling you this because although this is my lived experience, it's also the reality that millions of girls face every day across every culture and in every country. being born into this reality set me on a lifetime mission of trying to prove myself and just feel like I was enough. What did I want to be when I grow up? I wanted to be treated equally. In fact, us girls, what we desperately want is a seat at the table. It's what every motivational poster, Instagram account you follow, business card tells us success is, a seat at the table. And if they want to be extra spicy, they say, if there is no seat, drag your own seat. I'm sure you've heard this, right? And so my marching orders were clear. Get a seat at this coveted table by any means necessary. And that's been the driving force behind my entire career.
In 2019, I'm going to say what everybody said at the time.
Do it, baby. Do it. Hit it.
You debuted as the first bisexual woman of color to host a network late night TV show.
Bam, bam, bam. There I was, Lily, the baby born a brown girl, rubbing elbows, or at least time slots, with comedy royalty. And I got to give a huge shout out to NBC for boldly trying to break late night tradition. I remember when this show came out, I remember all the articles because they looked practically identical. Bisexual woman of color gets late night show. I almost legally changed my name to bisexual woman of color. Because that's what people called me so often. And you know, as strange as that sentiment was, I thought, okay, the silver lining is that we'll finally get a different perspective in late night. Now a little bit of melanin, a dash of queer, a different take on things. Let's do this. And I remember thinking, now, I've been invited to the big table. Things will be different.
And so when that happened, you pulled up that proverbial chair and found what?
Trash. I found trash. I mean, here's the thing. I think there's a really unfair expectation that someone could step into a world like that and suddenly have their groove, have their voice, have everything figured out. Like, for the first meeting I had about the show, when I was expressing some of my reservations, being like, okay, guys, we're shooting a lot of episodes here. I need to know what kind of support I would have. Like, I want it to be my voice. I want it to be good. I want it to be making commentary. So for me to try to do that and be that involved in 96 episodes over 3 months, honestly was truly the death of me. I would be up for like 14 hours. I would write, do the writer sessions, and I would do two or three shows a day. Then after that, I would do a writer's meeting again at like 10 p.m. And then I would go home and read all the things for the next day. It was just not set up for success.
Still, I thought, if the budget doesn't celebrate the historicness of the show, then the creative can. You know, I can bring some much-needed spice to late night. And sometimes I was successful.
I came out to my friends as a vegetarian.
But other times, I would receive notes like, don't be so big. Don't be so angry. Smile more, Rubby.
Leisha was arrested, had her home raided, and was thrown in jail for, are you ready? Wait for it. She clearly must have ruffled a lot of feathers. What did she do? She edited a Google Doc.
And my all-time favorite, don't over-index on the South Asian stuff.
You know, I couldn't even invite Rajesh's mother-in-law's cousin's nephew's wife's cousin.
I love that guy, man.
I know, she already called it.
I kept trying to pull up my seat. I kept trying to ask for a more supportive seat. But every time I would be told that I should be grateful to have a seat in the first place.
You mentioned in your talk some of the notes that you got from executives when you were making the show. What did they like about what you were doing and what did they feel needed to change?
You know, the South Asian thing particularly bothered me because sometimes I felt that what they are considering over-indexing on the South Asian stuff is me just talking about my parents and life. I did really feel like the punching bag for all identity politics. I vividly remember one day after I did my episode, I went to my green room and I took out a piece of paper and a pen and I literally wrote down, okay, how many times did I mention being a woman? How many times did I mention being South Asian? How many times did I mention being queer? Is this enough? Is it not enough? Are people going to be mad? Mm. It was just an impossible situation to be in.
There is a conversation going on, you know, about whether the era of late night TV is dying. Do you think that the executives were like, okay, yeah, sure, Lily's great, but also she ticks all these demographic boxes for us, and those are the young people we need to start watching TV around midnight to save ourselves.
So I've thought about this a lot. You know, it seemed like NBC was trying to get in a new audience by tapping into my audience, which is young and diverse and super open-minded. But at the same time, they were very scared to alienate their current audience, which is used to seeing a straight white man back to back to back to back.
So your late night show did end up getting canceled. You know, if someone read that sentence, they would immediately think, oh, she failed.
Totally.
But did you see it that way?
Truthfully, it's hard for me to not partially feel that way. But I don't think I failed. I think we failed, honestly. I think it's a failure from NBC's end. I think it's a cultural failure a little bit. Because I was really excited when I got my late night show to hit on some topics that only I could uniquely hit on. You know, the farmers' protest in Punjab was one of the biggest protests in human history, and I covered it in my second season. And the amount of headlines I saw that had Trevor Noah's perspective on it and whoever else covered it, not mine. There's things I would definitely do differently as well. I would never get into that situation again if I didn't think it could be a success. Because do I think it moved the envelope forward? Yes. But do I think it was too short-lived? Absolutely.
When investing in women, don't invest in the 1:30 a.m. time slot. Give them the support they actually need. Cultural change takes time and money. Heck, it took my grandfather 25 years. So a true investment is one that values potential over proof. Because so often that proof doesn't exist for women. Not because we aren't qualified, but because we haven't been given the opportunity. Inviting everyone in isn't just a nice gesture. It makes for better, more productive, smarter conversation with more than one point of view. This is about creating a world where half of the population can thrive. You see, because the work we do today can create a world where future generations of girls can have equitable access and opportunity. A future where everyone is seated at the table equally. And a future where being assigned female at birth is not a disappointment or a disadvantage. Because girls are encouraged, empowered, and expected to do great things. Thank you so much.
Lily Singh is a comedian, writer, and actor. You can see her full talk at TED.com and her latest TV show, Muppets Mayhem, on Disney+. On the show today, Loudmouths. You're listening to the TED Radio Hour from NPR. I'm Anoush Zamarodi, and we'll be right back.